The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
This is our first integrated curriculum Dean's Fellows panel for the semester, so we're all kind of excited to be here. And thank you for coming. Today we're going to talk about a whole bunch of things related to jobs that you guys might be interested in for not only this coming summer, but also going forward. And we'll also talk about a whole range of activities that you might be interested in getting involved with here at the law school in the next couple of years. So I will leave it to whoever it was that was going to start, and we'll get going.
All right, welcome back, everyone. It's great to see you again. I hope you've had a great break and a great New Year's. Hope you like your new professors and are adjusting to being in school again. I'm going to start talking about summer jobs and what kinds of jobs are available, things that don't really sound like jobs, but they still are, and things they're great opportunities, so you should pursue them. First, there are jobs for pay. These are firm jobs, and in some cases, working at nonprofit organizations and the like. You will most likely be able to find these by going on to, I guess it's Simplicity now, and we were one else, it was eCampus Recruiter. I don't know if those are still commercial.
Are they? I think you're all on Simplicity now.
You're all on Simplicity. Okay, so you'll be able to find job postings on there. This externship fair that's this afternoon, you probably won't be able to find jobs for pay, but you might, so keep your eyes open for that. A lot of firms in DC don't hire 1Ls for summer associate positions. That being said, there still are a few that do. So if you're interested in doing that, it's a great opportunity because it gets your foot in the door, will likely lead to another summer associateship after your second year, which will probably lead to a job after you graduate. Yeah.
I was under the impression all of those applications were due like December 1st. Am I wrong?
You would know better than that. I don't know if those applications are due on December 1st. I do know that I had friends who got summer jobs at firms in the spring, like very late in the spring. So I think it definitely is on a firm-to-firm basis, and especially with smaller firms and mid-sized firms and firms that are outside of D.C.
As a response to that, I think at least with all the stuff I've seen for that, a lot of the deadlines were like November 15th and December 1st for 2Ls and 3Ls. But we weren't even technically able to submit applications anywhere, I think, until September 1st.
Right.
So a lot of places I've looked like January 15th, which is past now, but more like February 1st.
And again, those will be for the big firm jobs that have a very structured recruitment process that have a certain number that they need to meet every year to be able to fill their workload. But if you're interested in working at a firm and you may want to consider working at a smaller or mid-sized firm this summer, if you want to try a big-sized firm after your second year, this would be a great opportunity to do that. Outside of working for a law firm, you can also look for externships. And this is a great way for you to work and get school credit at the same time. If any of you are thinking about doing a judicial internship or interning at a government agency, I would really strongly advise you to turn that internship into an externship. You're going to pay for those credits, so it may seem like you're doing all this work and you're paying to do it over the summer and it doesn't make a lot of sense to you, but I would nevertheless do it because it'll lighten your load in the years to come, which will allow you to do more activities and will make your life a lot easier when you're a 3L. You can also take, if you do an externship, though, you'll need to take a seminar. So it's important. I think you have to be in D.C. to get that over the summer. It's a 3-credit seminar that you take, and then you get a certain number of credits depending on the number of hours you're working per week that you add on top of that.
And there is a long-distance externship seminar for people who meet a certain list of criteria. I don't know what it is, but there are students who do leave D.C. and get externship credit by doing a long-distance seminar. So you can look into that also.
And then another great thing you can do over the summer if you're thinking, oh, I still don't really feel like working, I kind of like this like school thing, and I really just wanted to travel every summer because that's what I've done, well, there's something that can accommodate even those of you who feel like that, and that's the study abroad program. People have had a great time at these programs. Sarah has done one, and she can speak to that. They go everywhere. You can go to The Hague, you can go to Turkey, you can do a European tour. There are all sorts of study abroads that are available. Professors from the school will accompany you, and it's a great way to get to know those professors on a more personal basis, which is always helpful. Do you want to chime in now?
Yeah, and you can also get credit for those. So that's a great way to lighten your load throughout the last 2 years of law school by going on a summer abroad program. They all last about 4 weeks, so I was actually able to go to the Europe program for 4 weeks and then come back and do 6 weeks at a nonprofit to get a little bit more legal experience. Other people can, you know, you can travel more or not, but that's a great experience. And so you actually take two classes for 3 credits per class. Everyone takes international economic and European Union law, and then you can have your choice between international environmental law or international human rights law. And Dean Grossman actually comes and teaches the human rights law class to the students who are in Europe, which is really neat. The other really great part about doing a study abroad program, any of the programs, is that along with the academic component of your class, you go on visits to particular organizations and agencies in the countries you're visiting. So it's a real neat chance to do practical application in your academic coursework. And the courses are obviously condensed to 2 weeks per class, so it's maybe not as rigorous as 6 credits at WCL.
Yeah, and there are just two other things on this list, but I think Sarah brings up a really good point, that you could combine a number of these over the summer because you have a lot of time, and it's a great way to do that if you can make the weeks work. But again, you'll want to check with whoever you're working with to see if they have restrictions or limitations on the number of weeks you actually have to work, and a lot of agencies and firms do. So the third thing that you can do is be a Dean's Fellow at school. And we're all Dean's Fellows, but there's another greater kind of Dean's Fellow that encompasses more students, and that's being a research assistant for a professor, or doing it for one of the clinics or one of the other offices at school. You get paid on an hourly basis. You're expected to do a number of hours per week. This is a great way to get to know a professor on a very close level. Can probably lead to a great letter of recommendation at the end if you do a good job. And it's just as good as having a job because you will get paid. It's not as much. It probably won't be as much as if you were working in the private sector, but it's still a really great academic experience, and you're still able to tell employers in the next year that you had a job and you worked over the summer. And the final thing is to take classes. And you can take – you guys are lucky with the electives because some of you are able to kind of get a sense of other classes like international law and ethics in your first semester. But you can if you weren't able to get into ethics, or if you weren't able to get into some of the classes that you wanted, this is a really great time to, again, lighten your load and get some of those requirements out of the way, or get some of the big classes out of the way that you know will take up a lot of time in the next year. Like, I know a lot of people who take evidence and BA over the summer because they're really hard classes and they require a lot of time, and it would just be nice to be able to do that over the summer when you don't have the requirements of the school year and the classes that you're taking and your other obligations. So that being said, you could do a combination of any of those things. We've all kind of written up things we've been involved with. The rest have included jobs, but I did a judicial internship my first summer. I think it'll probably be helpful for us to go down the line and say what we each did during our first summer. I worked for Judge Ruiz on the D.C. Court of Appeals. If you're interested in doing a judicial internship, if you haven't already applied, I would really recommend doing that. The Office of Career and Professional Development can help you with that. And they have an entire book of every judge in the area and in other states that you can like flip through and get their addresses and everything else. If you're interested in working in D.C., come talk to me. I can tell you how I found my list of judges and how I contacted them and what I put in those applications. But in general, you're going to want a cover, a resume, a writing sample. Your writing sample can generally come from one of your rhetoric assignments, something that you've done well on. You can condense that into a 5 or 10 page writing sample depending on what the person is looking for. And then you may also want to have some letters of recommendation and a list of references, but those two generally aren't required for these summer jobs. So Scott, do you want to say what you did this summer?
Sure. I actually have been, or you know, for a number of years, I was a paralegal at a big firm downtown, and actually still work there and have been working there for the last several years as a law clerk. So last summer, I worked full-time, and I took 2 classes in the evening. I got ethics out of the way, and honestly, I can't say enough about doing ethics in 9 weeks as opposed to 14 weeks. So if you're in the city and have, you know, some flexibility to do that, that's something I highly recommend. And I also took another class that I knew I was going to be really interested in, that was called Federal Regulatory Process. That is one of several classes that's only offered over the summer. I don't think there are many of them, but when it comes time to register for summer classes, so toward the end of the semester, those listings should be pretty clear in the course list. So yeah, that was my summer, just working, you know, a regular full-time schedule and taking a couple of classes at night.
So I'm doing the joint JDMA degree, and so I got MA credits out of the way during my first summer. I talked to a professor at the School of International Service and worked out an arrangement where I could go to Russia. They have an affiliation with a couple law schools in Russia, so I just worked out an arrangement where I could go there for the summer and get credit for that. And I had to give a presentation and do research there and write a paper, but it was basically just kind of whatever I worked out with the professor is what my obligations were. And so, you know, it was good to get some credits out of the way for that, and it was a good experience.
So I did the Paris London Geneva program, and then I came back to Washington and worked at a nonprofit called Break the Cycle that does domestic violence representation of young people. So I can certainly talk about sort of the nonprofit world as we go forward. The next sort of topic we wanted to talk about was how you go about finding these jobs or taking advantage of these opportunities we've mentioned, and Monty started to talk about that already. But today is the externship fair, as many of you know, and that's a great chance to make contact with employers. So at a lot of the employers upstairs, you'll just be able to drop off your resume or shake hands and talk with people, and they'll ask you to follow up by sending things in person later. So even if you haven't really prepared a resume or set of cover letters like you might have liked, or you weren't entirely prepared to go forward with meeting people today, I would still recommend walking upstairs and at least grabbing the packet of all the list of employers who came and their contact information, or selectively walking around and talking to a few people and then following up with them over email in the next couple of weeks. But then you can easily say, I met you at the WCL Externship Fair, and here's my information. So Externship Fair is a great way to come in contact with a lot of organizations in D.C. Then if you want to do an externship for credit, you can take any of the jobs at the Externship Fair, obviously, or any other job you find, and talk to the people in the externship office with Avis and talk about getting credit for those. And as Monty said, it's sort of hard to justify to yourself, I'm going to be paying the school for credit so that I can work for free, but it really is nice to have those credits under your belt. And you can also get financial aid loans to pay for your summer rent, but only if you're enrolled in at least 6 credits. So if you're someone who's working for free and not going to get externship credit, you hopefully have loans left over for spring, but there's not really any other way for you to get money unless you are doing an externship for credit. So that's one other reason why some people will do externship credit for an unpaid job. But the externship office itself is also a really good resource. They have a number of lists of organizations in D.C. and databases you can look through if you don't find something you like today or you want other options. You can also look at the Career Services Office. They have a huge list of employers, including more government agencies and NGOs than you might see today at the externship fair. Other good places to look are just to ask other students, 2 and 3Ls. A lot of us have done externships during the school year or summers, and can sort of point you in the right direction and name some places that you might be interested in. You can also talk to professors you have, tell them sort of what area you think you might want to work in, and ask for recommendations of places they know of. And a lot of them may have personal contacts, students and professors, where they can, you know, send you along with a personal recommendation, which is often very helpful. Then the other thing to do is keep an eye on the docket. That's where you're going to find out about any of the study abroad program deadlines and the professors who want to have research assistants over the summer. There's that section in the docket called In Search Of, and Professor Ira Robbins actually already has his posting for summer research assistants. But a lot of those will start coming up more around after spring break, beginning of April. Professors will start looking for research assistants. And that's a great way, like Monty said, to get paid, get a, you know, close contact with a professor. That's a great thing to do over the summer.
I just wanted to talk a few minutes about the application process and how to apply for the things that you might find that you're interested in. A lot of this may be familiar to most of you, so I'm not going to dwell on it too much. But definitely take advantage of the services that the Office of Career and Professional Development offer in terms of resume review and cover letter writing. Sort of get together at the beginning your standard resume and what you might include in a very general cover letter for them to take a look at, and then you can use those templates that you create and have had them review to make specific for your other specific job applications. I know we also have a service now that I think is called Optimal Resume that's available to all students. That's sort of like a resume formatting program. So if that's something that you're worried about just in terms of time, you know, this is an interface on the OCPD website where you can just input all the information you want to include on a resume, and the computer will essentially put it together for you. I haven't used it myself, but I have a feeling that that's how it works. But follow up with them if you're interested. Also, like Sarah said, if you have a chance to go to the externship fair today and either give out your resume to potential employers or don't, follow up with those resumes and cover letters using the contact information that you can get at the externship fair. Chances are the people who are here today are going to see a whole bunch of people and they may not remember you specifically. So write them a letter, let them know that you talked about it. You know, if you can reference something specific that you talked about, that's even better. That'll help jog their memory. And then just send them, you know, another copy of your resume and indicate your interest in the position. I think that would, you know, likely go a long way to help you land those jobs if you're interested in them. I thought our career services website was called CareerLink. Is that not true anymore? Is it called Simplicity now? That is? Well, anyway, whatever the website is that Career Services uses for job postings, both for you know, the fall recruitment process and generally, I believe it's available all the time. But if you're not specifically looking for something and are just trying to get a sense of what's out there, take a look at that website and you may end up seeing a lot of things that you might be interested in that you otherwise might not know how to find. So that can be a great resource. Also, you can submit applications through that system directly. Most of the employers that have postings on our system will have links to their recruitment departments or you know, email addresses for people to send applications to. So all that information is available there. If you do know specifically what you're looking for, go to the organization's websites, look to see if they have an online system for applications or an email address to send applications to. That sort of, you know, that I think is pretty simple, so I'm sure you guys know about it already. And in terms of volume of applications, I have always been a proponent of more rather than less in order to give yourself as many options as possible. It's a really good feeling to have, you know, several different things to pick from and have to struggle to do it rather than to get to the end of a semester or get to the end of a year or, you know, hopefully not the end of your law school career and then be struggling to find anything. So the more applications you send out, obviously the better your chances are of getting some positive response. And if you sort of put some time in at the front end by preparing a resume, preparing standard cover letters, sending the applications really shouldn't take all that much time. You know, it can be as much as just a few words in an email to let someone know how you found out about them and what your interest is and what you're interested in doing. So definitely send out a lot of applications, as many as you have time for.
And just to make that a little bit more concrete, when I was applying for a judicial internship, I knew I wanted to stay in D.C., so I only applied to D.C. judges, and I probably sent out 55 cover letters and resumes to 55 different judges, and it took me probably 2.5 days to write it, get my resume printed, get the labels done, and handwrite certain things, and put them all in envelopes and take them to the post office and get them on mail. So while you may think that it doesn't take a lot of time, it takes more than you think, but it's just 2.5 days. Just take a weekend, do it, get it over with. In fact, if you haven't done it, I would really suggest taking the next 2 weeks and really figuring out what you're doing, because a lot of students are applying now, and you want to make sure that your application is at the beginning of the pile. Yeah.
How many offers did you get from those?
What judges will, for judicial internships, what they'll do is the clerks will call and they'll set up an interview. And I got a call from Judge Ruiz very early on, and one of my friends had worked for her and really liked her. So I interviewed with her, and then as other calls came in, I just didn't take the interviews. And then I sent letters saying that I had already accepted a position. So I don't know how many I would have ultimately gotten had it stayed open, but within like a month, I had a few options.
Yeah, like Monty was saying, I would say now's the time to really start thinking about that. A lot of people are, you know, starting to apply for these jobs. Probably by the end of February, you want to have the bulk of your applications sent out for you know, if you're applying for a job or an externship or something in Washington. Now, you know, you want to start thinking, write up a resume, a cover letter, take it over to the Career Services office, like you're saying. Probably for the next couple of days, you want to do that. And just start making up a list of places where you want to apply and get their contact information, their instructions on how to apply, put it in a document where it's easily accessible, easy to find, so then you can, when you get all the documents together you want to apply, you can just go down the list real quickly and send them off, and that'll make it easier for you. But now's the time to really start thinking about that. So I think that's all we have right now.
Yeah, but one thing I wanted to add, I think I mentioned too, is so definitely the next month is the time to look for jobs. The study abroad programs, you don't have to, the deadline to apply, I think, is April 1st, and they don't really fill. They'll take as many WCL students as apply, so you don't have to worry about deciding now. You can wait to see what job offers you get and then decide about going abroad. Same with professors, the summer job, research assistant, dean's fellowships with professors, those will come up more after spring break. So that can sort of be a good, you know, if you don't get the job you're looking for, a good second option for you, or you can wait and that those come up a little later in the semester.
Now, we're going to shift into activities, but does anyone have questions about jobs right now that we can address?
The one thing people always say, sorry, and then we can take your question, is that the thing to remember about being in Washington, D.C. for all these externships and organizations is that students come from all over the country to Washington, D.C. for the summer to take these externships. And so all of you are very competitive, and a number of you will get great externship positions this summer at organizations in D.C. But remember that we also have the opportunity to take externships over the fall and spring semester since we do go to school here. So if you don't get the ideal externship you're looking for, you know, do something else this summer. Work for a professor, go abroad, and then take that externship in the fall or spring. And sometimes you can even tell someone now that if you don't get summer or, you know, something that you're interested in fall, and line something up for fall now. So just keep that in the back of your mind as you're going through the searching process for summer.
Yeah, and just to echo that, that's a really good point, Sarah. And I think that that should kind of stress the importance of figuring out what you'd like to do early on, because students from all up and down the East Coast, all over the country, really do come to D.C. to work for especially these federal agencies that aren't anywhere else in the world. So you're competing against the cream of the crop from all of the top 10 schools from everywhere across the country. So make sure that when you're writing those cover letters that you really target the organization or the agency saying why you're interested in it. You know, go to their website, do research, make sure you're putting in the requisite time beforehand to make sure that you're saying, look, I'm really interested in this, I've known I wanted to do this, and this is why I'm a good fit for you. So be weary of sending the generic cover letters and resumes for summer jobs, because they are extremely competitive.
Do you still have your question in the backpack? No.
Okay, well, also, another thing that we wanted to address is activities for next year, because towards the end of the semester is when you start thinking about, you know, what you want to do next year. And so we just thought we'd go over a few options in terms of what, you know, what's available for you guys next year, what you might want to consider in terms of what activities you want to do. One of them that you always hear a lot about is the journals. There's four law reviews here. There's the Administrative Law Review, the AU Law Review, International Law Review, and the Journal of Gender, Social Policy, and Law. And there are also a number of other briefs. That's other kinds of publications that are also run and administered by the students. And so those are different things to think about. In terms of getting onto Law Review, there are a couple different ways. There's the write-on competition that's going to take place over spring break. And also there's in grades at the end of the first year. The vast majority of people are taken through the write-on competition. So if that's something you're interested in doing, you want to consider planning some time to doing the write-on competition over spring break. About the write-on? Sure. Okay. What the write-on is you know, over spring break, the Tuesday before spring break, you get a packet of materials, and that's your universe of sources that you're allowed to use. And what you have to do is you have to write a case note about a topic that's going to be given to you, and it's 10 pages. You have to use endnotes and just use only these stack of sources that are given to you, and that's going to be evaluated by the law review staff.
And all four journals use the same competition, so you can write one 10-page case note based on this closed research of universe and then submit it to 1, 2, 3, or 4 of the journals, the same paper. So there's you don't have to compete for each journal separately. And you rank which journal you want, and then those preferences are matched up with how the journals have scored your entry to give you the highest preference of the journal you want compared to how that journal scored your entry.
And just in terms of what law review is, just so you know what it is when you start thinking about it, if you want to do it, there are really two main things involved with law review. First is editing articles. Other kinds of other law professors and other authors submit articles to the law review for publication, and the students edit them. That involves gathering all the sources, all the footnotes. You have to gather those sources and check to make sure that they say what the author says that they say, and then edit the text. And that's largely what the editing process involves. And there's also a writing requirement. You have to write a note or comment, which is a long paper that is then submitted to the law review for credit. It has to be of, say, publishable quality. You know, something relating to the topic that the journal publishes about.
And you'll be contacted from the it's the Joint Journal Committee, but you'll be getting an email likely from Jasmine Watson, who is on the American University Law Review, giving you the dates for a mandatory meeting. And when you go to that meeting, Sarah and I will be there, and a few of the other representatives from the Law Reviews and Journal will be there, and we will give you more information than you would care to know about law reviews and the write-on process. But for the purposes of planning now, if you're planning on going away for spring break, plan on leaving enough room in your suitcase for the big stack of materials that you'll be taking with you if you're planning on competing. In terms of the amount of time it takes people to complete this process, it varies from person to person. I think it's probably similar to the way you do your classwork or study for finals. People who, you know, are able to do it really quickly and study for finals quickly and do their reading quickly, you'll probably be able to do this really quickly. I take a really long time to do everything. It took me the entire 2 weeks, and I stayed here in D.C. and did it. And you'll have the week of spring break, so that'll be a really great opportunity. You won't have to worry about doing it in between your classes, so I would really take advantage of that week, because it is really hard to fit in the time when you're in school and trying to still read for class and everything.
And Monty mentioned the meetings. If you are interested in doing the competition, you have to go to a mandatory information session, and those are February 25th and 26th. Monday the 25th is at noon, and Tuesday the 26th is at 10 p.m. So just mark your calendar, and that's when, if you go to that meeting, you don't have to do the competition, but that's when you'll get the whole rundown of information about it. So I'd recommend at least going to the meeting to see if you're interested.
Okay, so another thing you can start thinking about is the clinical programs here at AU. We have a lot of clinic programs, and they're very big, and so most people, if you want to do them, there's going to be room for you, not necessarily as a second year, but definitely as a third year. You know, mostly it's third years, but there are second years who get onto it because, you know, there are a lot of spots. And what that is basically the clinics function as pro bono law firms that serve clients who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford attorneys, and they... there are a lot of different kinds of clinics. There's the general practice clinic, which just handles general civil matters, such as bankruptcy, personal injury, family law, probate, any kinds of civil matters. There's the tax clinic. There's the human rights clinic. There's a transactional business clinic. What are the other clinics?
Domestic violence, tax,
right.
Women in the law.
Yeah, women in the law.
Human rights.
Yeah, human rights. Yeah, there are a number of different kinds of clinics. And there you handle real cases. You're the attorney that does all the work. You're supervised by professors, but you really handle the case. You have to make all the decisions for yourself. And it's a good it's a good way to learn the skills involved with lawyering, because you really are kind of thrown into the heat of things, and you have to pick it up as you go along. So it's a good experience in terms of learning skills for lawyering. Also, there's Moot Court, and Moot Court does competitions around the country. There's Moot Court and Mock Trial, and then also there's the Moot Court Honor Society, which serves as the kind of administrative branch of the Moot Court, kind of supports the Moot Court teams. There's also the Marshall Brennan Program, which is students second years go to D.C. public schools and teach constitutional law to the students there. There's the Legal Rhetoric Dean's Fellow positions. You guys know about them. And Dean's Fellow positions with professors, that's another thing you can do during your second year, not just during the summer. There's a lot of different kinds of student organizations. We'll go through some of the ones that we were involved with. And then, like Sarah was talking about earlier, there's other externships and internships and other kinds of job-related opportunities throughout Washington.
So I was going to talk about now sort of how you might be able to combine doing one or several of these different activities you've mentioned, because there is a lot to get involved with. So a couple of things to keep in mind as you're sort of thinking, wow, I want to do all of those things. You have 2 years at WCL in which to do a lot of these things. So you can do Marshall Brennan your second year and clinic your third year, or vice versa. You can do an externship, you know, one of any of the 4 semesters you have left at WCL after your first year. So you can really think about the whole the next 2 years as a package and try to figure out what you can do when to do a lot of different activities. The other thing to keep in mind is that a lot of these organizations give credit, so you can combine your course schedule with these activities that give credit to give yourself a little more flexibility. So all of the four journals are two-year commitments, actually. So you'll do these competitions in your first year, but you'll be committed to journal for your second and third year. But you get two credits per year that you're on the journal. So most students will take their two journal credits while they write the paper that Eric mentioned, your long student note or comment. So that sort of obviously is a big commitment to me on journal, but you can offset it with your class load.
Do you know what the maximum number of credits you can get outside the classroom is?
No. There is a maximum you can get outside the classroom. And Dean Jaffe, you'll have an academic advising session. Is it 12?
I think it's 12, but I think a certain number, there's like a qualification on that. So if you go to the registrar's office, there's a whole list of graduation requirements, and that'll indicate what non-course credits you can, how many you can have.
So for example, when you're doing clinic, those you get credit for it, and some are non-class, but some are considered class. Marshall Brennan, you get credit, but it's considered class credit because you have a seminar. Externship, some of the time, it's some of those credits are going to be non-academic credit for the work you're doing, and some will be academic for the time you're in the seminar. So there's still a way to do a lot of these programs that give credit and not reach that requirement. So the other programs that are going to give credit, like I said, clinic, you get about 7 credits per semester for being on the clinic. So that, obviously, you take that and then just maybe 2 other classes or 3 other classes, so you're able to fit that in. The couple other general tips, the big plug I wanted to make was that making the decision about how many activities you can do is a really individualized determination based on the combination of things you're interested in. So you should come talk to your dean's fellows during office hours, and we can advise you. But really, it is sort of a combination of I'm interested in this, this, and this. What's the best order? What's the best combination? Can I handle this, 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 and this, or is this too much? You know, it's really going to be an individualized determination, but we would love to have you come talk about it in office hours or over email with us, and we did put our emails on the board. But a couple things to keep in mind are that it's almost always better to do a couple of things and focus in on them and do them really well rather than stretch yourself really too thin. As far as student organizations go, I would also recommend looking for a leadership position and really getting involved in the planning of events for an organization. You know, it's easy to say you're a member of Women's Law Association or a bunch of other associations and just show up and eat pizza a couple times a semester. But it's another thing to say, you know, I'm the events coordinator and you're the one, you know, contacting speakers and things like that. So I would recommend going for a leadership position on one of the student organizations. And one of the sort of tricks about WCL is that the student organizations are almost exclusively run by 2Ls. There are a handful of 3Ls who are still really involved, but almost all of the sort of president, vice president, you know, leadership positions of the student organizations are 2Ls. So I would recommend going out for a position like that in an organization you're interested in and combining that with journal and maybe one other thing, one other organization. Do people want to talk now maybe about the things they've done and how much time they took? Or should we? Well, why don't you talk, Scott, and then we can finish that way maybe.
Okay. My list of activities is up on the board behind me, and you know, I'll be the first person to caution you about spreading yourself too thin. I'm involved in a lot of different things, and combining those with work and a couple of other volunteer service organizations that I'm involved with outside of school, my schedule is pretty nasty. So, you know, in hindsight, I sort of wish that I had gotten myself involved in fewer things, but at the same time, I still have a lot of fun doing them, and I'm glad that I'm able to contribute. Let's see, what's it? You guys all already know that I'm an integrated curriculum dean fellow. I also work with the legal analysis program, which some of you may have participated in, I believe, over last summer. And that's actually a great thing to get involved in. It's just a couple of weeks of commitment over the summertime to attend the program and provide support to Professor Clark, who runs it. And then there is a 5-hour week office hours commitment during the semester. I am on the junior staff of the American University Law Review, which has been a lot of fun so far. I'm actually in the process of writing my comment. I turned my first draft in on last Sunday, so I'll have a couple of further opportunities to look at that over the course of the semester. And Law Review actually is a really good experience. It certainly helps a lot with your writing and editing skills, and gives you a chance to put together, you know, a fairly long piece of writing, where in your other classes you might not have a chance to do so. I think a lot of people don't start taking classes that have the opportunity to do papers at the end of them until a little bit later in their law school careers. So that's certainly a super opportunity to do that. And for those of you who don't know this already, which maybe some of you or all of you, I'm not sure, the purpose really of being on a journal is for not only contribution to legal scholarship, but also to act as sort of a proxy of your writing ability when you're applying for jobs later on. Most firms or other employers aren't going to have a chance to read a terribly long writing sample from graduating law students who are applying for jobs there. Certainly one thing that Law Review can be really helpful for is simply to distinguish yourself from other people who might not have that similar writing and editing experience, and can just end up being a really big plus point on your resume. I also am on the editorial board of the Sustainable Development Law and Policy Journal, which actually doesn't take up a whole lot of time. I've written a couple of short articles and edited a couple of long articles for our recent publications. That's one of the sort of other types of publications that Eric mentioned that are entirely student-run, and can be an excellent alternative to being on a law review. You might actually have many more opportunities to write and publish pieces on one of those student-run publications that's not a law review in your second and or third years, and we have tons of them. There's the human rights brief, criminal law brief, business law brief, sustainable development law and policy. I'm sure there are others that I'm forgetting, but I wouldn't be able to remember what they are. Also, I think some of you already know that I am a part-time student. I work almost full-time, usually somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30 to 35 hours a week during the day. So I have most of my classes at night, but my job schedule is flexible enough so that I can be here during the day for stuff like this, which is actually really fortunate. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do it. But in that connection, I'm also involved in the Evening Law Students Association. None of you, I assume, are evening law students, so that's not really relevant here, so I won't belabor the point on that one. My specific area of interest is energy, land use, and environment. So I also got myself involved in the Energy Law Society. WCL, as you know, has a society or organization or association for just about everything under the sun. So there's, almost regardless of what your interests are, there's something for you to get involved in. And I also think that Sarah's point about trying to get into a leadership position is really important. Sort of being signed up for a listserv and getting emails, even if you're not going to eat the pizza, is not something that people want to see on your resume. I think it might almost look worse to put it on there if you actually haven't done something of substance for the organization. So anyway, those are some of the things that I'm involved in. So if any of you guys have those specific interests, feel free to shoot me an email and we can talk about more about those opportunities and how to get involved. Oh, was that what I was supposed to do instead of talk about my activities?
No, you're supposed to do both.
Well, I apologize. So the last thing on our agenda was sort of how to choose the activities which are going to be right for you in your law school career. The chances are that some of you have a pretty good idea of what you want to do, and there's an equally good chance, if not a better chance, that most of you don't have any idea of what it is that you want to do specifically. I don't really think that that's important at all. So many people are in that same situation. Get involved with activities. Try to figure out what it is that interests you, because at some point you're going to have to know that. But at this point, it's really not a big deal. So go to introductory meetings to the extent that organizations are still having them. If there's a particular speaker that comes to WCL that piques your interest, go to that presentation, see if it actually does interest you. Talk to the speaker afterwards. Most of the people who come through the building are more than happy to talk to students and actually are really happy that people are demonstrating interest in their area of expertise and what they have to say. So that, I think, can really only help. And the other thing is that, you'll hear a lot, I think particularly this semester, about what people are doing over the summer, who's doing short write-on, who's going to try to rely on their grades to get on Law Review. Don't worry about it. I mean, everybody takes a different path to where they end up in their legal career. You don't have to be on law review. You don't have to participate in student organizations if you don't want to or don't feel that you have time to. These are just things that could potentially be helpful in figuring out, helping you figure out what you want to do. So don't stress about it. If you're not doing the same things as everybody else, it doesn't make any difference. Everybody, I'm sure, is going to end up being very successful, so it really doesn't matter. And also, you know, the point of being here is to learn the law and concentrate and focus on your classes and do well in them. So that additional level of stress that's created by comparing yourself to other people, you know, not only applies to activities, but also applies to grades and things like that. So just don't let it bother you. It's not worth the effort. And also, we've mentioned it a couple times in other contexts, but this is one of the best cities in the world to be in terms of being involved in the legal community. We have the federal government here. We have all sorts of non-governmental organizations, big business, small business, all sorts of things. So, you know, if you're not finding what you think you want to be looking for at school, you know, get out there into the city, do research on the internet, you know, make phone calls, write emails, talk to people, let them know that you're interested in what they're doing, and, you know, something will pan out for you. So definitely take advantage of our surroundings here. I think we're really lucky to be going to school in such a fruitful place for that sort of thing. So don't let that slip by.
Do you guys have any questions about jobs or activities?
Okay.
Me again, sorry. A lot of, like, not everything has application processes that happen at the same time, and some things aren't happening until next fall, and so I mean, if you have any tips on, like, I guess, I don't know what else you could do, but just hope for the best. But I feel like if there's things I'd rather do that happen later, but then I don't get on them and I pass up the chance to apply. Do you see what I'm saying? No.
Well, do you mean in terms of, you know, getting involved with things that are happening now at the expense of not being able to do them later?
I guess what I'm thinking of specifically is Newport Montreal happens now, the team happens in the fall.
I mean, I think if there are things that you already know that you're interested in, I would contact the people who are responsible for those organizations and just sort of let them know what your situation is. Talk to them about, you know, if you're interested in moot court or mock trial and really want to do one and start to do it, you know, let's say when ADR comes up in the fall, ask the ADR people if you think you'd be able to handle both at the same time. Talk to them about what their weekly, you know, time commitments are going to be and their meeting requirements are going to be, and just make sure that all of that will fit into everything else that you have going on. I mean, I guess my best suggestion for that sort of situation is just to try to plan ahead as best you can. It's got to be tough when that happens. You know, I haven't experienced that same situation, but when not everything happens at the same time, you're inevitably going to run into conflicts like that.
I would just prioritize. I think I would just spend an hour and think to myself which one I would rather do, and I would go for that one. One thing that I do want to say is, I was really involved in college. I had a schedule like the one Scott just described, and coming to law school my first year, I was really tired from just doing classes and trying to keep up and doing well. And for that reason, I was really selective about what I did my second and third year, and I'm really happy I did this. It was right for me. I had at least a full day every weekend where I could do what I wanted, you know, or, you know, I've been to D.C. a few times, but this is my first time living outside of my hometown. I love being able to go out and see the city. And so I think things like that are important. And if you're not able to do everything, if you don't make law review, or if you don't take moot court, look for something else you might be interested in. But otherwise, just enjoy the position you're in, because all of us are headed into a profession that requires a lot of us, that's going to be really stressful, and you would never expect to hear this in law school, but these next 2 years may be the best 2 years and most relaxing of your life, you know? So, especially those of you going to big firms, which is what I'm facing in one semester, so you bet I'm going to take this semester and kind of relax a little bit before I gear up for that.
Do you think we should be sending hard copies of our applications and stuff if an address is provided, or is it okay just to do electronically?
You know, I have always done both. If I can apply electronically, I will, because it saves time, but I always follow up with a hard copy. And I think that makes a lot of sense, because emails don't get through all the time. Attachments may not be able to be opened. Sometimes things are, you know, messed up if they're not PDFs when someone else opens the file. So I think it always helps. And to that end, if you meet people at the externship fair, some of you may want to send thank you notes. Like, it was really great talking to you, especially if someone took like a good 20 minutes to talk to you about a position and you're really interested in it. Handwrite them a card and send it to them. We live in a world where it's really easy to sit behind the computer and send an email, and that's quick and it gets the job done, but I think it really speaks volumes about you if you take the time and handwrite a card, and you'll definitely stand out because people just don't do that kind of stuff anymore. You guys seem nervous. Are you nervous about the externship fair? Everyone's so tight. Don't you think there's like a weird vibe? You're wearing fine.
I want to wear jeans.
That's what it is. Everyone's uncomfortable in their clothes and heels. Any other questions?
We'll have another panel later in the semester where we talk about classes, what classes you can take your second year. But the other thing to remember about getting involved in your second and third year is that you'll really get the academic part under your belt. So second year is not easier, and I think my fall semester, my second year, was my hardest semester, but not because of the classes, but because of all this other stuff that everyone tries to get involved with and has going on. But you'll figure out sort of the academic thing after this year, and it'll be a lot better to do other things. So don't panic.
We'll be up front if you guys have questions or want to kind of ask things individually. But we'll do anyone else? Any questions? Last call.
Come to office hours.
All right, come to our office hours and we'll stay up front for a while. Thank you.